please.
Okay, thanks, Saro. It's great to be here at UP again after a few years. As you see, last time I was here, I was much younger, so, but I'm still the same guy. So I'll be talking about driven distributive arrays, which is kind of quite related to the program. And before I start, let me just acknowledge and thank a few people. I would like to thank the organizers for sending up my talk today in the evening of Thanksgiving, which is great. Everybody seems to be rushing off, but some of you are still here. And so that means that you're really interested in what I'm going to say. So I prepared a little bit detailed talk of 175 slides. And or you're very far away from home, so you're stuck anyway, so enjoy. Okay, so what do we do? This is some work which is basically done in two places. I'm superposed between Singapore and Europe and Crete, two islands. And what we've mainly been looking at the last few years is how to engineer strong correlated states of light in quantum nonlinear setups, both for in and out of equilibrium many body simulations. Tools that we use is open systems approaches from quantum optics, a lot of numerics in collaborations with various groups, mainly in Oxford, and scattering method is something very recent we're looking at. Platforms are couple cavity or couple QED arrays, where most of this talk will be based on. When I say couple QED arrays, you can have something in mind that looks like this. This is an artistic picture of a CUQED array, resonators, talking to artificial atoms. But most of the talk will be general. I won't really talk too much about specific parameters and implementations. We're also looking at 1D systems and quantum nonlinear optic systems for many body physics with light, as also quite a few people in this room. You have, again, in terms of pictures, you can imagine one-dimensional fibers or hollow core fibers or tappet fibers, and you have atoms trapped. You have a strong coupling here, and you can create, again, strong photon-photon interactions and do many-body physics with light. And also we're looking at integrated photonic chips, like the ones that Alex was talking about yesterday. Andrew White. But again, probably if I have a little bit of time, I'll talk about the recent experiment on this. Okay, so the outlook of the talk will be mainly about quantum simulations of equilibrium many-body physics with cavity arrays. I'll say a few things about the JSA model, what these photon locating mode transitions are, this kind of old work, and I will try to move fast through this into the current interest of our group, which is driven dissipative arrays and out of equilibrium phases and methods. Like what kind of phases can we see and how we can study them analytically, but mainly numerically actually. Phenomena will include this photon crystallization, fermionization in one dimension out of equilibrium. And I will try to focus more on the main part, on how maybe we have some sort of preliminary results. You might be able to use scattering approaches to do many-body spectroscopy in these systems. Okay, so quantum simulations also was mentioned yesterday extensively. I decided to add a couple of slides using the word and the terminology, quantum simulation, many-body physics. That's kind of equivalent in a sense, at least to me, or it should be, languages. Everybody knows about optical lattices and the great success the last 10 to 20 years in simulating many body systems, Harbor models of various types, ion traps as well, many for digital quantum simulations and slightly smaller scale, but you have more addressability, more control. Linear quantum optics, but especially in these integrated waveguides, are very promising, especially towards this. Boson sampling has been proven there, or has been shown that is one of the promising directions. People have done proposals on chemistry and so on, and something that has been around for some time and relates to the superconducting works recently in the Josephson junction arrays is also there. So according to my understanding, when I say quantum simulator, just to clarify, I'm talking about an experimental system that mimics a simple model of a Monday, or a family of models from condensed matter or high energy. Number two is very important, that the simulated models should be relevant for applications or understanding of condensed matter or high energy, or in general quantum input systems. And the number three, we should not just simulate anything. I mean, people are talking about various things sometimes, simulating the Schrödinger equation. Or I think that what should be more interesting is to, if either the problems computationally very hard for classical computers, that in the meaning that there are no efficient algorithms, or the system is too big. And there is an exception in this rule, in the sense of when you have something novel and exotic, which is somehow there exists some model which you can run on your laptop, but nobody can be able to observe it so far for various reasons, then maybe building up a simulator system and checking that out might be interesting. And of course, your simulator should allow for broad control of what you're simulating, preparation, manipulation, detection, validation. What kind of things we should look at? I mean, of course, you can look at statics at zero temperature, ground states and properties, and this is mostly where the works in this field have been so far. The driven dissipative stuff is more recent. Non-zero temperature and statics, dynamics, many-body quantum dynamics, especially out of equilibrium, is quite interesting, dissipative dynamics. And although probably for this audience, this slide is not needed, I'll go through it anyway, maybe for the students. What's a superfluid to insulator transition? What's the most probably famous simulation so far in this kind of general field of quantum simulations with different systems, in this case it's with cold atoms. I mean, there are these seminal works, the theory in 98 and the experiment soon after, where people have managed to show that if you track cold atoms in a two-dimensional, it's actually three-dimensional lattice, in this case this is two-dimensional picture, you can actually prepare these mode states, and you can actually adiabatically go back and forth and measure with a very high precision what was predicted as a motor superfluid transition. And there's some basic maths here, how the state looks like. This is a product, and this is the corresponding superfluid in these different regimes. So you can look at the variance of the excitations per site, how they fluctuate, in order to quantify the people in these optical lattice experiments. They do, they switch off the lattice, and then they map the momentum distribution, so it's slightly different from what I'm showing here, but that's just the basic physics. Okay, so how to do now all this stuff with photons or with light? Photons do not interact. I think we heard it probably quite a few times in this program. If you really want to do many-body physics with light, you really have to get them to interact properly. And the only way to do that is through matter. You need to trap them somewhere. You need to have a lattice in the same kind of optical lattice. Sometimes people from out different fields confuse the optical lattice to the photonic lattice. Photonic lattice, when I say photonic lattice, I mean a lattice where you trap photons. For example, if you have cavities, and then you can put the photons within, and they bounce back and forth, and they stay there for a long time. Now, people were doing experiments in cavity GD for a long time. Beautiful experiments, mainly for fundamental physics, but also for quantum information applications. And they have seen what's called a strong coupling, when the photon and the single atom really can interact many times before the photon is lost from the cavity or is emitted in a different direction. And there was this seminal work and proposals about photon blockade. What's photon blockade? Equivalent to electron blockade. You stick a photon into the system. The energy stays changed because of the coupling to the atom. You try to stick a second one in, there is mismatching and there is repulsion. So you have effective kind of interaction in a sense. If you combine these two, then maybe you could have some sort of strong correlated physics, but using photons in this case. And of course, coupled cavities is, you know, in the usual cavity QED sense, is something which is extremely difficult experimentally. However, recently people have looked at microwave cavities in these CQQED architectures. This is some work from Andrews Hook lab in Princeton, where they have managed to couple 200 cavities. You can see one cavity is basically this resonator. Here's a microwave resonator, supposed microwave excitations. You have this kind of six of them create this Kagome type of lattice. And the idea is to really probe them and check them and characterize them now. In this case, there are no atoms, so everything is linear, but still is a very complicated thing to do because the frequencies, there is disorder when you fabricate, and moreover, if you try to put artificial atoms to couple there, it's another challenge, but nevertheless, people are pushing in this direction. So assuming you have something like this, I mean, we are theorists, so we can say, like, sir, why not? And you try to study it, then the simplest way to study is to write down a very simple, this is now without losses, first step Hamiltonian, where you just put, you have your resonators, which are these operators here, you have your atoms, and you have what's called a James-Cummings interaction, plus hopping between the photons between each resonator. This is what's now called as a James-Cummings-Hubbard model. It's something we wrote down at that time and just looked at the ground state. It's a single two-level system in this case. Of course, you have to be, as we say again, as we saw later, in the strong coupling regime for this, all these things to work. So if you try to look at the variance of excitations, again, in parallel to the picture I showed earlier with the cold atoms here, let's see what you get. So if you do, now this is a finite size calculation, just using numerics, very basic numerics. What's the important bit here is that you cannot change the hopping between the lattice sides of the, as in the cold atoms case. Once you fabricate the structures, more or less, I mean, there are some approaches recently that you can change the overlap. The only thing you can control here, you can control the atom photon detuning. So by detuning the atom with the photon in its cavity, you shift this dress state in and off resonance, and this way you can actually control the effect of the nonlinearity. When the atom and the photon are very far detuned, the splitting is not there, the harmonicity is not there, and the system is really linear and non-interacting. So if you do that and you look at the ground state and you calculate this, the variance of these total excitations per site, you get something that looks like this, that kind of signifies that some sort of phase transition is going on, or some sort of crossing. You can extrapolate this to large number of sites. You can do two dimensions with mean field theory. People have looked at that at the same time as soon as we put this out. And of course, you recover very similar things that people have been looking for years in the sense of Bose-Hubbard physics, where you have here the hopping, there's the chemical potential. Now, in this case, you have the extra axis, which is the detuning between the atom and the cavity. So this is, one thing to take home is that James-Cummings lattices or James-Cummings-Hubbard faces is not just Bose-Hubbard with photons. It's something more, actually. We have an extra axis to play with. And the excitations are actually, at resonance, for example, fully mixed atom and photon excitations. Of course, I mean, there are many works now in this area, both theory and experiments, also by people here, looking at different things. If you have interaction in two dimensions, you can do fractional whole kind of states. There have been recent works by Mohammed on topological and gauge fields. This is in a linear regime. People are looking at CQQD, and again, in the linear kind of integrated wave guides, you can do all kinds of interesting photonic physics. Probably you heard about this earlier on in the program, or you will hear about them later.
Sorry.
Yes.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
It looked from the Hamiltonian that you'd made a rotating wave approximation.
Yes, yes.
Is that always safe? Or
no, it's only safe when G, in the stroke coupling regime where G is like, is much larger than the losses, say the 100 to 1,000 times, but also 1,000 times at least smaller than the omega, then it's fine. As soon as you go to super stroke coupling regime, which is very tough, people in CQQD have managed to get there for single resonator physics, then you have to take into account the counter-rotator approximation. You have the Rabi model, the Rabi-Hubbard model, and people have studied that as well recently, actually. So it really depends on the implementation. Usually it's okay, because it's quite tough to get there anyway. Other systems and platforms, I mean, it's not only about resonators. As I said, 1D systems that exhibit strong photon on linearity, light matter coupling. People have been trying to do to put atoms in hollow core, maybe still some of them. More recently, there's this beautiful works with Rydberg atoms. You have strong interactions there, and you can get the photons to interact. I mean, still at the two photon level, that probably, hopefully, might be able to be scaled up. More recent works where you have nanofibers or photonic crystals and you trap atoms close by are also seem to be promising. I mean, if you can do that, then you can do other models. You don't have to stick to lattices and Bose-Hubbard or whole states or fractional whole states. You can do different things like one-dimensional models. Again, this is just a picture. I don't have time to go into details. You prepare adiabatically. Here is again, we are at equilibrium kind of situations. You prepare the many-body state of a strongly interactive model what you want. You quantum engineer it. And then there are ways to release this and map what you have in here into photons propagating out. You probe the correlation photons of the correlation functions of the photons and recover what's going on in this many-body system you have. Okay, so there are works around and lots of theory stuff, mainly in this direction, I would say in both discrete and continuous models. But what I would like to focus more is this driven stuff now, which is this is what I think is where the field personally, in my opinion, is going, and it's more experimentally relevant as well. So many groups, most of them here, people and also some others. So let me get into this, what I mean by out of equilibrium. This is a photonic system. So naturally, if whatever we want to do is to reproduce cold atom optical lattices kind of phenomena, but with photons, probably we wouldn't be here today, nobody, none of us. I mean, this is interesting and cute, and it might lead to somewhere, because naturally we have an open system. I mean, photons leak out, and I mean, okay, in the early works, we ignored them and we didn't really look at them just to see what's going on. But really, if you want to go experimentally and check what's going on, you have to include them. You have to pump and you have to look at steady states or out of equilibrium situations in general. This is just a schematic of kind of two different approaches. I mean, this is kind of one people from semiconductor or photonic crystals might kind of find this familiar. When you pump, you have a slab. You have your emitters or impurities or whatever atoms, quantum dots, and they couple to light. And this is a CQQD type of implementation that where you pump from one side and you detect from the other. How to treat this? Of course, as soon as you put losses into realistic losses in, if you don't pump, the ground state is just a vacuum, photons leak out, and there's nothing to do. It's boring, and there's no physics there. I mean, and the difference with normal atoms as well, and cold atoms, fermions, atoms, photons do not have a really chemical potential. You cannot really do approaches like in that case. So one thing is you can do a quasi-equilibrium, so you prepare, and then you try to do your measurements as fast as possible and try to see some transient dynamics. Again, interesting, some works have been there, but you have to be fast. And as I said earlier, driven system is the way to go. So what I mean by this? When I say driven, of course, this is not completely new. I mean, we knew that if you use photonic systems, you have to drive, and people have looked at driven dissipative many body effects, but in the sense of this BEC states of polaritons, where you actually have a Gross-Pitaevsky type of physics. It's not kind of a fully strong correlated type of case. So what we, some say now works in this direction. People have worked in, and also around here today. What I mean by driven dissipative, I mean the fully strong correlated case, like type of Bose-Hubbard or James-Cummings-Hubbard physics, out of equilibrium. So you have your Bose-Hubbard or James-Cummings-Hubbard or any kind of many-body lattice Hamiltonian implemented. You have driving in here, and then you have your dissipation. This is how your photons and your atoms basically dissipate. It's a tough problem. I mean, as most people in this room can verify, numerics are complicated. As soon as you pump, then you have high photon occupations. You need to keep a lot of states in your numerics if you want to be realistic. Okay, if you go to very weak pumping regime, then you can do some numerics when you have like 3 or 4 excitations per site maximally. You do what's called this tensor network approaches. But again, all this in one dimension. If you really want to go to 2D, there is really very little that has been done. Yes.
But why are you saying it's tougher, much tougher than the...
Well, because it depends. In the simplest case, we just have a two-level atom, and you have 2 times n, so you have a spin with a boson.
Of the states.
Exactly. But if it's like more complicated, start with 4-level atoms, or you have all kinds of things, then it gets tougher.
Can I also ask you, when you say driven, usually you're assuming a coherent drive?
Yes, I'll get to that actually now. There are different types. That's exactly the next slide. So there are different types of drives, and this is what's also kind of interesting in the systems. You can have coherent drive of this type, where you drive one of the resonators, all of them, some of them, equally uniformly with phases, different cases. I'll say a few things later. Or you can have parametric driving, for example. This is also very interesting, where you can imagine that you have some sort of chi-2 material here, you pump and you get pairs of photons into the cavities and back. This is some interesting approaches as well here to do Majorana-like modes by people here. And then what I will say a few things more is about this, what we call fully quantum driving, where you have Fock states. When you pump, when you actually send, you know, one, two, or few photons with different energies, and you're trying to look at a situation where you pump from one side and measure transmission in the other. Again, in 1D, maybe in 2D as well. So so this is kind of very recent ongoing stuff. I'll get to that. Let me quickly say a couple of things on this coherent-driven phenomena. What I'm showing here, so this is the James-Cummings ladder, 1 minus 1 plus, 2 minus 2 plus. And this is the Bose-Hubbard ladder. And this is how the driving looks like. I'm plotting this here just to show the effective kind of mapping where sometimes we kind of use the non-linearity in the Bose-Hubbard is this one. This is the single photon state, 2-photon state. This is the U. Equivalently here, because of the photon blockade and the harmonicity, this is the effective U. So for low excitations, when you want to compare the two models and you want to see some physics, this is how we match the two kind of non-linearities, because you need to know what are you talking about. As I said in the beginning, only in a specific limit, because sometimes we tend to forget that, only when there is a large detuning between your cavity or your resonator or your photon and the atom, you can approximate the two things. Actually, you can show that these are the energies of these dress states. If you expand them as a function of for large delta over G, then you get a term which looks like the Bose-Hubbard model, but that's only in this limit. And actually, if you check, because there is a delta, this is kind of a perturbative thing, that forces you to have a very large values of light-matter coupling to really see any non-linearity in this case. So to put it simply, the James-Cummings system is fully nonlinear on resonance, and that's the best way to look. Otherwise, and as you can actually check this, if you look what we study here, this is steady state population in the James Cummings, where you have this kind of the two wings, where this is the empty cavity, and then you have the dressed states. In the other case, in the Bosch-Hubbard, you have a very different spectrum. And you can actually try to match one with the other with this large detuning. And you see that to do that, you really need something like, if you have a 10 d over g equals 10, you need like 10 to the fourth times stronger gamma in order to really see this kind of nonlinear effects. So that's a single resonator physics, the steady state population. You can do rings, and the same thing will be there, larger arrays, and it's kind of verified. I don't need to kind of, I just want to say a few things on the populations. If you study large now arrays, this is 16, which is kind of largest. Now we can do maybe 40 or 50. Out of equilibrium, you solve the master equation, you look at the steady state, you calculate the expectation values of photons, atomic population, the sum, and assuming you had a Bosch-Hubbard of the same effective nonlinearity, you see very different values as a function of this detuning. When the detuning is very large, and you go to this what's called the atomic limit, and then you see that the for example, the photonic part of the Bosch-Hubbard, of the James Cummings-Hubbard goes down because there is no photonic excitations there, and it's mostly on the atoms. And that matches the Bosch-Hubbard. If you go away towards large deltas, or at zero detunings and resonance, these are very, very different. So one has to be careful when he says we have a care system in general. Exotic effects, you can have, I mean, these are signatures. I mean, we don't really fully understand them. They just come out of numerics things at steady state. Again, this is a calculation when you put phases now. You have 16 sites. You drive each one with these relative phases, and that creates circulating modes, a flow, both for Bosch-Hubbard and James Cummings-Hubbard, for different values of the detuning for the James Cummings and for the Bosch-Hubbard, the equivalent thing. You see what's called some sort of signal of photon crystallization. So if you look at site 8 in the middle and how the correlations behave as you go further, you see that there are some sort of dimers formed that kind of circulate in this kind of driven dissipative sense around the system. This is for reasonable. You see J over gamma is the same. There's strong losses here. And the pump is the same value. And Z over kappa is 20, strong coupling reserve. When I say gamma equals zero, there is no atom emission, but only cavity loss. Yeah.
So what is the lattice of this oscillation, the period of the oscillation?
Well, phases? It seems to be at the neighboring sites. So if you see here there's 8, then there is a probability that the G2 becomes 1 at 9. And it goes down at zero again.
Because the phase is pi over 2?
Yes, I think it's related
so
to that.
So if you would change the period of the phase?
Yes, it might change. They might get more separated.
I mean, on this lattice, the wave vector pi over 2 corresponds basically, so you have like a cosinus dispersion, you're
actually mode,
excited at the inflection point, right? So basically, you can have a pair scattering in k-space and you have a parameter.
Yes, they're going flux. Like this, yes.
So basically it's pumping at the inflection point. This is similar to what also obtained with polaritons in for weakly interacting.
Yes, points. Yes, this is where it comes from, but for we.
So
for
I mean, you have two polarities, go one signal and either like a parametric, and it's phase match at pi over 2. So the period should be the 2k, which is the wave vector of the either, that's why you have two sides, no?
It could be, I'm not sure, but.
But this is a paper that Arpant, it was there.
Yes. This is This is also, he has done. What we've done for the James Cummings-Hubbard, just to see whether it's actually, because you do the populations, they are behaving very differently for this case. And what we saw that depending the values of the tuning, you can get a similar kind of correlation functions, but only a certain values. But I mean, if you look at the Bloch mode picture, you find out, and then you see where you're pumping, maybe there is a mechanism, what you say, I think. We can talk more.
So,
can I
ask,
do you
see any remnants or signatures of the equilibrium Bose-Hubbard model in this driven situation?
Probably. I mean, we don't know, I mean, in the, if you take the equilibrium Bose-Hubbard, then you can also drive, when you drive U into large, you get fermionization, you get crystallization. But the thing is, what we get a steady state which is fully mixed, so it's difficult to really quantify what's going on. Where does all these things come from? But it's a nice signature that something is there out of equilibrium. And if you play with the dissipation and the Lindblom operators, you can do even more things if you engineer them. I mean, people have been looking at this in cold atom physics to engineer. I might say a few things later, but that's some slightly different. Here we look at the natural way when just the photons just go out. Okay, so this is coherent driving and kind of global, where you drive things like this, and then you look at you try to detect the light that is coming out and learn something about the system. I mean, for certain implementations or certain problems, this is the way to do. But there could be other cases, for example, when you have some sort of input-output situations, like in CQQD, where you come in from one port and you come out from another, where you have, you might want to use what's called input-output, which is also used here, but also in the quantum case. So how to deal with that in that case? Let's say you're sending Fock states, and you drive with fully quantum kind of light. Are there any applications in quantum transport? Because now you have photons propagating through the structure. And can you actually probe this the many-body structure by looking at the light that is coming through? This is just indications and very preliminary works. We've been looking very recently. So the model we've used, this N-lattice, again, Bose-Hubbard-like, you send through a waveguide 1, 2, 3, up to 2 is the calculation we'll talk about, and then you see what comes out. And the idea is now you can actually, because you have quantum input, you can also think in terms of different kind of frequencies. Each photon can carry different frequency, and you go through the first manifold, the second, and so on, and then you observe what comes out. What's the physics in this case? Of course.
Can you explain again? So, if you come back to your diagram.
It will be clear now on the next slide, actually, because I'll talk about the details. Of course, you can do transport or this kind of input output standards using the user driven dissipative purpose master equation. I mean, you have a coherent drive, you drive the first of this. You don't drive all of them, you drive locally here, and then you observe the last one. And by solving the master equation here, and assuming there is no field coming from this side, you can actually have some sort of transport situation. And this is fine, and it's relevant to specific cases. There have been some recent works in this direction where you look at fermionization, for example, in the hardcore regime. And you can calculate expectation values and the G2s in this case. What I want to say is that sometimes, and I will show some examples, this kind of technique fails to represent the correlations if you look at it from the many-body spectroscopy case. Let's say I want to learn about this many-body stage by looking at the photons going through. The coherent driving case give me how to say non-faithfully what's going on. And I'll give an example on this. So to do this, you need to use what's called the scattering formulas. People have been using this in different areas for some time, also in photonics. I have that's the next one. There are some works by many people, Sam Huynh Phan, Barringer, Plutukov was here, Mikhail, I think he's left today, where they look at usually waveguides, cases where you have single emitters, two-level atoms, and cases like that. And some more recent works on the cases with many atoms and in this Markovian approximation local regime where you actually are interested more on the effective spin dynamics. Let me explain a little bit more the way we look it up using the scattering. In this case, it's the Lipkin-Zwinger, but there is also possible to do a more efficient way to write down things. So, very brief review what this Lipkin-Zwinger stuff is. You have your system. You go back in time where you have your incoming state. Very forward in time, you have your outgoing state, and the interaction is here. And the idea is to write down and find this interacting eigenstate, basically, and solve it for the system. I'll give an example. So in our specific case, what we consider is you have, this is where you come in. This is your waveguide. So this is the incident light, the incident photons, and how they come out. They reflect. This is incoming and reflection. And this is the transmitted. In all stuff I will talk about, things are coming only from the left and not from the right, but the reflection is there. So you can write down the system Hamiltonian. You have the waveguide part, which is just photons propagating on the left and on the right on some sort of waveguide with some point which we linearize and has some sort of group velocity like this. And on the right hand side, this is in space. You can start from the usual a dagger k, a k in the momentum and go back to this. This is our local scatterer, but it has this kind of multi-mode or many-mode structure. When I say local, there's no time delay between hopping between the photons from one to the other. That's a slightly different problem, interesting problem as well. And then you have this, how the incoming light couples to the first photon, to the first cavity. There's a C dagger A and vice versa. And this is the outgoing thing. So the first thing is to try to find an eigenstate for this, which is kind of tedious for one, and it's very easy for two, getting more complicated and so on. You write down your state like this. There can be a field on the left, which is the waveguide, basically, that can either come or reflect. And or you can have your field propagating on the right, or you can have excitations in the cavities. Now, you plug into this time-independent Schrödinger equation. You solve this for this initial condition. You have light coming from the left and nothing coming from the right. You get a set of coupled equations, you solve them, and you get the transmission and reflection coefficients that tell you how much light goes through and how much gets reflected. This is an example now for two resonators. If you go to the two-photon case, things get a bit more complicated because you have to take into account all possible combinations. You can have two photons on the left, or they can be on the right, or they can excite one resonator or be on the left or on the right. So things get, it's kind of plug and play, but it gets complicated if you want to really do more larger systems. There is dissipation. I'll get to that actually on the losses at the end. You can treat dissipation by assuming there's losses from here to there. So if you can effectively treat it as omega minus I gamma for its cavity. But if you want to have extra channels, if you want to actually have jumps where the photons go out and you detect somewhere else, then you need to put another port. I'll say a few things at the end on this. Let me fast forward because, as I said, this Thanksgiving event, maybe everybody's tired. You can calculate the scattering matrix here, and what's the important bit? I will skip all these equations. So this is how it looks like for different. This is the forward matrix element for different values of this waveguide to cavity coupling, which is basically tells us is the bandwidth of the input port. If you have strong coupling, then you get. I mean, these are the peaks where the scattering element has maxima, and this is actually when you hit the these are the single photon states, and this is the two photon states for this value of the U. And you can see how changing the V actually broadens this. So you really don't want to go to a very strong coupling. Your input case has to be broad enough in order to see this.
Yes. The resonances
for this problem.
This is a single photon.
Yes, let me show you the eigenstates. So this is how the eigenstates look like. These are the single particle, and this is the two particle. So if you can have different paths. So for example, you can go through the first manifold and then excite one of these guys or down and all the possible combination. Now this is what actually is plotted here, depending on the detuning of your photons. The scattering matrix picks everything up, actually, which is nice. Now, what is the interesting part beyond all these complicated calculations? I mean, not that doing the driven dissipative thing is easy, because you have to do numerics and you don't have any feeling as well, because it's numerics. Let's just look at this example. If you come with two different photons, let's say we stick the first photon to be resonant with the first manifold, and the second we scan through and see what comes through. In the second case, we assume that both photons have the same energy. If they have the same energy, and you try to probe and do spectroscopy in the system, you have to always go, most of the time, through some empty state. There's nothing here. That means, as you would expect, that the transmission spectra will be much weaker in this case because you go off resonantly. And what I'll say is that the correlation functions you get, although you probe the state, are not really representing the state, but actually have to do with the light that comes in. And this is something that is picked up only from the scattering matrix. To understand this, let's look at how the eigenstates get populated for different detunings. So the solid line is where we come fully resonant through the first and then the second different photons. And the dotted is when things are, you go through off-resonant, the off-resonant situation. When I say two photons of the same case, I'm still in the quantum Fock input, but I'm building up to discuss later the coherent state. When you drive with a coherent state, you have zero, you have one, you have two components, but they're all the case, they have the same frequency. So what you see here is that, for example, these are the eigenstate excitations. As you would expect, there's a huge difference in the populations, how well you can excite if you compare the two cases. I mean, the dotted lines are all very much lower, orders of magnitude less. You don't get enough population here and there because you get off resonance. That's not news. What is news is that if you look at transmission, the same thing carries on. So what that translates experimentally is that you get very little clicks. I mean, your photos do not go through if you go off resonance, if you try to scan all the many body states. So you really should go in this way. If you go this way, so one thing is that you get much more data and signal when you come out, but also the correlation functions, and this is where I will try to wrap things up. If you calculate the correlation function for the propagating photons, this is how they behave, and this is now the interesting part. So let's look at, these are the eigenstates of the dimer. The dimer is nice because you can write them down and they look clean and understand what's going on. So you have the single particle states and these are the two photon or two particle states. We ignore the rest because we only have two particles, so we're never going to go higher. And let's say we try to follow one of the states. This is the green line, is the E minus 2, which is this one state with the minus, which as you increase U over J goes to the 1-1 state, which is kind of the corresponding mode-like state in this small finite system, right? This is 1-1. What you would expect is If I'm driving this one that goes to 1-1, and I'm looking what the photons that come out, I would expect that you start from the linear regime where you get bouncing, the photons can get in, because you have a large component of 2002, so you start from 1, and you would expect that it should go as it increases. If your photons that come out really represent the states properly, or the correlations of the states of your many body system, it should go down to adimbancing as you increase your energy. And this is exactly what we see if you use this resonant approach. If you do two photons, or as I say in the next slide, coherent driving, you get a weird bump in the beginning. So this is kind of, before you start going to like anti-correlated to 1-1 type of states, and the bounce, you go to a super bouncing thing. And this is actually has to do again with the way we pump. And the way the correlation, the system actually, there is a large component of vacuum so because we have to go off resonantly, the single photon states are chopped off. So you mainly get, whenever you get it, because you don't get it very often because of resonance, you get mostly two photon states. That's why you get this really weird bump in the beginning, actually, which does not represent the statistics of this many body state. That should go like this.
Sorry, yes. Can you explain a bit this? Because it's not that this G2, is it normalized?
Yes.
Because I do not understand how it can, the statistics can depend on how efficiently.
Because it depends how you pump. The input light, your statistics that come out, you project against what you send in. So it really depends. If you send, let me show you the coherent state.
Then it's matter because, I mean, the state of the dimmer is the same for the two kinds of.
Yes,
pumping,
but the probing.
On a different.
That's exactly my point here, that the dimmer won't change. The many body system you're simulating is the same, it's the Bose-Hubbard. It won't change. But the way we probe it, if you probe it with coherent drive and you look at what comes out, you will see this bump. And it really has to do with the fact that the coherent driving has this off-resonant case, and it goes through. First, you won't get enough signal because you go off-resonant. Secondly, because you have this extra component, and the single photon, the single particle is chopped off, you never get single particles basically because it's off-resonant. You either get two or nothing in the same energy case or in the coherent driving case. That creates, in the way that the correlation function is calculated, creates an extra artificial superbouncing, which is not there. That's not how the state behaves. And that's exactly what we calculate here. We calculated the G2 for the two photons using scattering. And when I say the scattering formula is like this, you use the driven dissipative approach, which is exactly what you guys have done with the master equation. And then we also plug into the scattering the a coherent state. You can expand the coherent state like this and then do scattering for each of these components. And they all really match exactly on top of each other, which is different than the different energy inputs.
But is this a many body probe? Or is, because if my array is like 10.
Then you need to 10 photons to really do it. It's that's
no,
the problem.
No, no, no. I'm saying that if my array is like I have 10 cavities, then I get more of these resonances because. In the thermodynamic limit, you just get a tight binding.
Yeah, yes. In general, it's different. This is a finite size thing. What I'm saying is, when
none of these peaks will survive when I go to a peak system.
Yeah, that's a different. Yes, that's true. True. This is for finite system, and these peaks will get closer and closer, and you get different physics. That's a different thing. But as far as, for example, I mean. Relevant experimental situation where you have 2, 3, 5, 10 people are building chains, maybe now of 10 or so. You try to quantify what's going on and where are the spectra. I mean, both of spectra wise, but also correlation wise. If you really want to see that the state you're looking is the state you're looking, you have to be careful how you drive. This is the take home message of this.
I still have not understood the let's say heuristic interpretation with the photons with the two colors. The diagram
of the two. Okay, let me go back. How much time do I have? How much time do I have?
Eight.
Okay. So you can either, what the scattering matrix shows is that if you go resonantly, you have, if you have different energy photons that you can scan, which this allows you
how,
to...
How do you control the frequency or the energy of the single photons that you send?
How do you produce them experimentally, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, at least in the model, you put the energy in the...
Yeah, that's the whole point of scattering formula. It allows you to have different energies. You can actually calculate the scattering energy for any input and amount. You see that you have resonances only when the states were the proper... only when this kind of conditions are satisfied. The scattering matrix scans throughout the eigenstates of the system.
So you leave the frequency as a parameter.
Yes, and we can actually scan throughout. That's what you get here. You get all the possible peaks. So this is for resonance for the single particle level, where you can have, this is the plus minus one. You have one state when they can be the same, and then you have actually 16, which are all the possible combinations. You can actually count them here. It's one and then two, or you can go from here and then there and back, and they're all the ways going up and all the ways going down as well, because both have to be resonant. Yeah.
Something qualitatively changes if your interaction is repulsive or attractive.
That's an interesting. We haven't checked for attractive interactions actually, but it should play a role. What's going on? I mean, maybe there's a counterintuitive thing there as well, in sense of here we see super bouncing where we would expect to go down. Maybe there is the opposite or something. I don't know.
For resonant driving, it's a symmetry of the detuning, no? For resonant driving.
For resonant, but that's what I say. I don't know what the results for the scattering is, what the scattering will show. Because what the scattering told us here is that if you look at this state, you're driving this state, the minus state, which goes to, as you increase U over J, goes to 1-1. If you have the state and you calculate the correlations and you change U over J, they go down.
I mean, if the rotating frame approximation is valid, you can map U and minus U and delta omega and minus omega, you get the same solution.
No? What? Say again?
If you can work in the rotating frame.
We are in the rotating frame here. We are in the rotating frame, actually.
There is a symmetry. If you change U minus U and delta omega, the detuning minus delta omega.
We are on the.
This J.
We are on the already there, and this is what actually what you get. Where is the? If you do the driven dissipative, what Saro and Alberto
have said. Also the J, yeah.
Yes. Okay. So let me. Yeah.
Depends. So when the interaction is negative, then you can create bound states. And if your system size is smaller than the bound state, then the positive and negative interaction would not matter. But if my system
because the size of the system, yes.
System size is now
makes sense.
Bigger than the bound state, then you can have a G2 positive and negative bunching and anti-bunching. Like the
this is easy to check because I mean this is really once you get into the states
for a finite system that's I think U positive and negative would not matter.
Maybe we can check this actually because now what I want to wrap this up is, and this is the loss stuff as well, to answer your question before I get into the next bit. This is how the losses are treated in this case. This is effective losses when you actually shift each of the cavities. And what you see is that as you increase, this is V, which is the losses into the waveguide, which are the good losses in the sense. But you can add some extra non-detectable. The key is that these are non-detectable. If you really want to, if you really have a jump into a photon in direction, then you really need to put another port there and calculate the scattering matrix for that. So in this sense, this is what can be done. Now.
But I mean, this replacement has been demonstrated to be the case for the master equation when you're in the limit of equivalent driving with the weak excitation. So if you have equivalent drive with F going to zero, where F is the driving amplitude, you can show that the
solution. Yeah, because you don't get the jump.
You have a pure state of whatever. And
you don't get the jump. That's approximation.
And the question is.
But we're saying here.
If you have Fock states, it's still.
What we're saying here is that you don't get the jump, most of your leakage is actually through the cavity mirror here and here. This is the good one, this is the V. Again, it cannot be too large because then you have this other problem of the bandwidth. And there is some here which can be tolerated up to this level. Where is it here? And then you see how they broaden up and then you lose the... So you go from 0.4 to 0.64. It starts getting... You don't see the peaks separately anymore. They overlap. And same for the correlation function. If just to wrap this up, this is an interesting approach. It's tedious. After talking to people here as well, which was nice, more like, I consider ourselves quantum optics, but some of I wear mostly my quantum optics card. I don't really have a condensed matter, but condensed matter, there have been people, I talked to some, Vladimir Yutson and a few others, and Mikhail Misapletikov, that they look at these things in a close, you can actually calculate for larger sectors. And this is something we actually also observed with Tianfeng, my student, but I don't have time to talk about it. Just gonna flash through it, just to say that it's possible to do this thing in a very systematic way. And not really have to solve the interacting eigenstate every time and do all the boundary conditions which get really complicated and so on. And there is a diagrammatic approach that we have been developing in order to do, for example, two photons in N cavities. And it looks like this, basically. There is a nice way you can write down all the possible paths. I'm happy to talk about it later. I don't want to go through it now. But the whole thing is that the scattering matrix of the system is related to just the local Green function of the system minus the waveguide. So what you do is you shift, you take your Bose-Hubbard, and you solve, you try to find the Green functions of the Bose-Hubbard minus this loss term. Let me go to this. This is the result. Where is the example? This is actually related to this result that you can actually it. Okay. Sorry. I promise I had 75 slides, right? So, So you take your Bose-Hubbard, you just change the first and the last that talk to the guide to this, and then you calculate the Green function for this effective model. And from that, you can actually get the scattering matrix in a nice closed form. And these are basically just the poles, and these are the eigenvalues. And what I just realized here, actually, and this was very nice in this meeting, that condensed matter pieces actually have done this. So we just really rediscovered something that was known, but in a different language. But that really makes things much more efficient. You don't have to calculate the whole interacting eigenstate every time. Okay, so I will stop here. My conclusions. Okay. So what I discussed, and probably you heard it as well from different people, or you hear it more in this meeting. What can we do with strong-related photons in quantum nonlinear media? Explain a little bit more on this Mohr transition than James Cummings Hubbard. I didn't talk about this. Looking at liquids or tiering models and all this stuff, a bit more on the scattering. What we would like to see, we would like to look a bit closer to specific platforms now, especially with the scattering formalism, whether you can actually say something about what people are doing in CQQD arrays, and also on this different way of driving and looking at out-of-equilibrium topological things. We're doing some things on integrated waveguides, but there was no time to talk about it. And the general kind of questions, which I think is also part of the general thing in the program, what are the general scalable platforms, how we can really probe, efficiently prepare and characterize many body states. I think there's a lot of work to be done there. What are the unique features? What kind of I mainly mentioned, really I didn't talk about the numerics. 2D numerics are challenging. Cristiano and a few other guys have proposed some recent things on this direction. And let me also advertise this. In 8 months from now or so, if you want to have some blue skies and nice seas, but a little bit more history than this place, you're welcome to come to this thing, which will be advertised hopefully next week. We're just setting up the website now, and the registration will open soon, and there's a bunch of people invited, and more will come, and there's a high overlap with what is going on down here. So thank you.
Dimitris, I have a question. So if you take this longer race for hopping larger than you in this region, so do you ever hope to see in this transmission the kind of Lattinger liquid picture?
That would be nice. This is something that, I mean, what I was telling about this, the way I would like to see it, and I would like to people also to remember this, is that this is a photonic quantum simulator. So a photonic quantum simulator can simulate this lattice models or can simulate continuous models.
No, I know, but you talking, my question is I'm talking about lattice models.
Yeah, but in the limit where
J is much larger.
Not complete in the continuous limit.
Yeah, not complete.
I don't know. That's a good question to check.
Because I mean Cristiano Jacob also this don't share the gas in the opposite limit.
In the other limit. That's a very good suggestion. Probably I don't see why not.
So.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you mentioned already that there are sort of somewhat analogous problems that come up in some condensed matter applications. And I remember there were some papers by Mayer and Wingudi and Lee, the people in the early 90s, where they sort of, in the Keldysh language, came up with some quite general expressions for the frequency-dependent transmission through quantum dots, if you knew the full Keldysh Green's function. Is this, I mean, does the stuff you were showing us in the Word document kind of a bosonic extension of...
It could be. I mean, Keldysh is definitely something that we would like to look up. Like in my group, and people already are looking up in this meeting. I think I mentioned Sebastian Dill is one of the experts in this. I know they've looked at decay kind of models, and you can apply that thing. I'm not aware. I don't know if anybody else in the audience can comment for James Cummings Hubbard type of things whether this is applicable or not. That's an open question, but definitely we need more techniques, analytic techniques for condensed matter to deal with these things that need to be adapted, of course, in this language, but it must be there.
But I think that the main difference with this maybe is that there you have two reservoirs with two different chemical potential, and here you have one dimensional channel, which is chiral, so photons.
No, but these map to each other, right? Because there's this work by Mujikansky and Dambrumanil.
No, sure. I mean, for the rest, I think you can apply the same. Once you define the current on one side, you can construct the current through this type of approach and get something which depends on the exact Green's function. More questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for.